Good afternoon, board members, Lahontan staff, and the public. Welcome to the regular meeting of the Lahontan Regional Water Quality Control Board. My name is Jeff Lux, and I am the chair. This is my first official chair duty, so we'll see how it goes. Give me a little forbearance here. Today's board meeting is being conducted in person here in Bishop and via Zoom. AGP Video is hosting our board meeting. Thank you, AGP. At this time, I'd like to introduce the other board members of the regional board here today. Rick Deaver from Crestline.
Good afternoon.
Robert Pierce from Bishop.
Good afternoon.
And Kimberly Cox from Hellendale.
Good afternoon.
Welcome, board members. Thank you. We have a quorum physically present in Bishop for today's meeting, and welcome to everybody. Our executive board staff are also here in Bishop, including Executive Director Ben Letton, Assistant Executive Officer Jan Zimmerman. Jan. Our legal counsel, Elizabeth Barrett, our board clerk, Ariel Lafarga, and we'll also be joined by other staff members for individual agenda items as they come up. For those who are present and wish to speak on an item, please fill out the orange card in the back of the room and hand that card to Ariel Lafarga in order to have a spot for speaking. In addition, we're receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform. If you intend to present or comment via Zoom, you should have submitted a virtual speaker card to our board clerk, Ariel Lafarga, and be in the Zoom meeting room already. If you think you might be interested in commenting via Zoom, please contact our board clerk promptly at ariel.lafarga@waterboards.ca.gov. That's ariel.lafarga@waterboards.ca.gov. For those joining us via Zoom, your camera will be turned off and you'll be muted until it's your turn to speak. When you're done speaking and the board members have completed asking questions, you'll be placed on mute again. This meeting is being webcast and recorded, so please speak clearly, and it will be available for viewing at a later time. So with that, let's go to our first item, item one, which is public forum. So any person may address the water board regarding a matter within the water board's jurisdiction that's not related to an item on the meeting agenda or currently pending before the water board. Do we have any speaker cards for public forum?
No, and no one on Zoom.
And no one on Zoom. No speaker cards, and no one in the audience wants to spontaneously make a comment. All right. That was an easy one. So item one, no public forum comments. So let's move on to item two, and that's the meeting minutes from the last meeting. The Water Board will consider adopting the minutes of the regular meeting of February 11th, 2026. I assume we've all read it. Any motions?
I'll move approval.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oh, yeah, to roll call. Thank you. Board Member Deaver.
Aye.
Board Member Pierce.
Aye.
Board Member Cox.
Aye.
Board Member Lux. Aye. All right. Meeting minutes passed. Thanks. All right. Item three, moving right along. Reports by Water Board. The Water Board members will provide our updates to Water Board and the public on events and activities of interest. And first, we're going to have an opportunity to hear from State Board Member Morgan. And Board Member Morgan, are you with us?
I am. Good afternoon, Chair.
Welcome. Welcome. Welcome, Nicole. So you may begin whenever you're ready.
Okay. So let's see here. Got a few updates for you this afternoon. So I'm not sure if I've reported to you about this or not, but State Board Annual Priors, this is something that the State Board does every year, usually earlier in the year. So here we are at the end of March, and we have not yet released our annual priorities. We do this on a calendar year. So on March 3rd, during a regularly scheduled board meeting, we continued the discussion about the priorities and an update to our strategic work plan. And so it's become a document that is rather lengthy, especially for a priority document. And it has evolved into a document that ends up where we've noticed that a lot of the board's core workload has landed on this document. And so in order to streamline the document, really better communicate both internally and externally, we've been working with our staff to retool the document some. And so has been an ongoing effort, and I have to say I'm really liking how where we're landing. We're landing on a much more streamlined document where we're able to really communicate, here's our some priority programs, and so some big picture programs, and that is all on one page. And then going into some priorities where one level is priorities that here are some items that are going to come in front of the board this calendar year. And then the second level are some ongoing priorities where we may be working on them and you may see some tasks that are coming up, but they're things they're going to be working on the next year or two. And then in the back, we have an appendix that show here's the core workload. Here's what are really celebrating what the State Board staff do. That's the majority of the work that they're working on. And so really still wanting to highlight that work, keep it there, just streamline that document so that we're better communicating. So that document is going to come out. We're looking at having it come back to the board on April 7th, and then we'll be able to get that posted for to share with everyone. And so drinking water regulations, this is another item that comes in front of the State Board annually. On March 3rd, the Division of Drinking Water brought their list of priorities and the regulations that they are working on for this calendar year. And this is another document that can get rather lengthy. And that's because the drinking water program, their regulations, it's not, it while it may be somewhat of a linear process, it really does have a lot of steps. And we really want to do a really want to be able to communicate where we are within those steps and where the touch points and where the public can engage, where you can submit comments, whether it's to us, to US EPA, when we're landing at other sister agencies. And so really keep bring you along on that process. And so sometimes, the regulations, some they may move what seem rather fast. When I say fast, it may move within 2, 3 years, and others may go out perhaps 10 years. And so it really is one of those documents that does have quite a bit on it. However, just really want to make sure that we're keeping everyone in the loop. And so some of the items that are highlighted this year, our Division of Drinking Water are working on some new MCL, some maximum contaminant levels. They're working on PFAS, NDMA, disembedded byproducts, styrene, arsenic. They're looking at the lead and copper rule, detection limits for reporting for metals and organics. Notification response limits for manganese. So revisions to the cross-connection control policy handbook. That's something that's been going on. We've been working with interested parties on looking at primacy applications. That's another item that's been occurring. Title 22 recycled water regulation updates and technical managerial financial standards. And so a lot of work happening within our Division of Drinking Water. Our Safe and Affordable Funding for Equity and Resilience, the SAFER Advisory Group held a meeting on March 12th. So additional information on that can be found on our program webpage. A large item that I'm sure Ben will like to chime in here, I'll give some background on what occurred at our March 17th board meeting. The State Board adopted a resolution outlining the use of our cleanup and abatement account, our CAA account. And so the use of a current as of July 2025 uncommitted balance of $34.4 million of available funding within the fund. So this fund can be used for Tier 1, which are primary urgency projects, and that's the primary use for the fund. And so those are projects could be urgent drinking water needs, or it could be like a spill to surface water where there's no responsible party. And sometimes that could be one project I remember, there was once a boat that had sunk in Lake Tahoe. The boat had been abandoned and wanted to, get that boat out. And so we helped chip in to pull the boat out of the lake because, you know, there was leaking fuel and other, you know, harmful substances to the lake. And so we want to make sure that we do, we can respond to the tier one priorities. And then there are, we can also use the fund for tier two, which we call, which are referred to as secondary urgency priorities. And that was established in the CAA funding program guidelines that were adopted by the state board in December of 2018. So that, you know, allows for some additional flexibility within the fund to really look at the secondary urgency, you know, needs of the state and regional water boards. And so this resolution is allowing for almost $21 million to be made available to those tier two projects. And so out of that amount, there has been $15 million that's been set aside for regional boards based on the formula, which provides a base amount of $850,000 to each regional board, with the remaining amount to be proportional to the fines and penalties collected over the past 5 years. The remaining $5 million will be made available for a solicitation to qualifying projects that benefit disadvantaged environmental justice communities or tribal communities consistent with CAA statutes and guidelines. And so I want to pause there to see if Ben, if you wanted to just add in a little bit more just about Region 6 and what can be seen coming your way.
Yeah, thank you, Nicole. So of that money she mentioned, the $15 million that would be split up amongst the regional boards, there was a base amount of about $850,000. And then the remaining portion was determined based on the amount of contribution that each region has had to the cleanup and abatement account over the last 5 years. So we're going to get about $1.2 million total. And just going over again some of the project types that could be monitoring and assessment activities that assist with cleaning up waste or abating the effects of waste, assessment and characterization of a site, again, where, as Nicole mentioned, where the responsible parties are not known or they do not have the ability to fund the effort, and even activities or tasks required to develop a basin plan amendment, example, a TMDL. Or maybe even a vision plan, Jeff. So we haven't even started the internal process yet to solicit project ideas, but that'll be coming forthcoming. And then we run it through DFA for kind of a final approval. So it's nice because it's going to make up a little bit for some of the cuts that we received last year to our discretionary contract funds that were part of those overall state budgetary cuts. So excited about the opportunity. Really applaud Joe Karkowski with DFA for advancing this resolution and bringing it to state board. I think it's much appreciated. Thanks, Nicole.
Thank you, Ben. So the other item just wanted to bring up also at our March 17th board meeting, we had an informational item on the Mono Lake modeling efforts. And so the state board staff held a workshop during our regularly scheduled board meeting to provide the state water board members with an overview of the known models of Mono Lake. And so UCLA Center for Climate Science presented on their new model, which incorporates climate change. LADWP provided an overview of their water balance-based model. The Mono Lake Committee provided information on the Foster model, and California Department of Fish and Wildlife presented an overview of the simple simulation tool. What was really interesting for me was that in the end, all models were very similar, provided similar results for past water levels. And so it's just when looking out into the future, there was some difference, and most of the difference was on how UCLA was incorporating the climate change. So it was very informative information, you know, item. And of course, you know, that can be found on the recording can be found on our website. There was an additional model that came to light during public comment. And so we did ask if that person could, if they could send our staff that model so that we would just have it also. We also did just ask if there are any other known models out there. Anyone else that would like to make those available for board staff and just, any additional information that is out there. We would more than happy to also have it put into the record. It was, a lot of commenters, not just commenters from here in California, but commenters from outside of the state, even outside of the country, providing input. It really was to be an information item, so the board was not making any decisions. We did ask staff to come to work with interested parties over the next several months and to come back to the board before the end of the calendar year to present us with options to move forward, including the option of information and what would it look like to hold a limited hearing on Mona Lake to open up the decision. So another item, just wanted to just provide just a brief input, tribal beneficial uses. Your board has been working with our staff as well as others throughout the state on just tribal beneficial uses, guidance, and just how we move forward to incorporating those. And just want to say, we're still working on that. Just really do appreciate your staff's involvement. And, I see, we are continuing to move forward. So all, just positive, just really want to express my appreciation for your staff continuing to work with the State Board staff on moving this item forward. Let's see here. Vapor intrusion workshops. And so there's been a few workshops held this year. I believe there's been three to date. The California Environment Protection Agency work group is holding a total of five workshops to share and gain input on CalEPA's efforts to address vapor intrusion at contaminated sites between February to June. The fourth workshop in a series is Vapor Intrusion Holistic Approach Part Two, Conceptual Site Model and Paths to Closure and Collective Decision Making. The workshops are only being held virtually. There's no in-person physical location. There's more information on the State Board's program webpage. The next one is going to be held in May. So just quickly, the Delta Conveyance Project, the hearings have begun again. I believe that there is one occurring today. Those are being held on the AHO, the Ministry of Hearing Office's YouTube channel, so you can tune in and follow them. And so right now is the petitioner's rebuttal portion of the hearing. And then in June, the protestant's rebuttal portion of the public hearing will begin. So that concludes my report for this board meeting. I am happy to answer any questions.
Thanks so much, Nicole. Board members, do you have questions or comments for Board Member Morgan? Ben? Thank you so much. Appreciate that. Okay, so now we've got our board member reports. Member Deaver?
Nothing to report.
Board Member Pierce?
Just a notice of a meeting coming up. The Inyo Mono Alpine Cattlemen's Association is meeting on April 11th down in Lone Pine. There's a social hour, a dinner, and then a meeting. And it's one of the most important meetings that I go to every year. All the agencies show up, BLM, U.S. Forest Service, LADWP, NRCS, Farm Service Agency. The county supervisors come in. The state cattlemen's come in and give an update on what's going on. And all those agencies give broad overviews on what they're doing and also what's specific to the livestock industry. So it's a good meeting to go to. That's it. Thanks.
Thanks, Board Member Cox.
No report. Thank you.
And I've just got one item and get a little input from you all if you have it. As chair, I'm invited to and will be attending at least part of, if not all of, the WQCC, which is coming up in May. And they're putting the agenda together literally as we speak, but they did say if we had feedback from regional board members that they would try to work that into the agenda the best they could. So what I'm looking for is if you have any interesting topics you'd like to hear from the other regions and state board about, or have them talk about. Let me give you the four or so that they already sort of teed up and said will be on the agenda so we don't duplicate those. One, talking about these new giant data centers and what they mean for water, both supply and quality. Two, listing out in writing and in person the major accomplishments of state board and regional boards over the last 8 years, because the current administration, this will be their last WQCC, and they'll be there. And so they kind of want to thank the administration, let the administration know what all the kind of good things that have been accomplished and what's been happening over the last 8 years. The third one is I put out there, which is if anybody has recent basin plan editing or update experiences, I would kind of like to hear about it so we could kind of help us with that same topic. For the issue of regulation and the overall issue of affordability and how they relate and what we're doing about it, that one was a little murky, kind of broad. I sort of got the idea, but I'm not really sure where they're going to go with it. But it'll be something on the agenda on the question of regulation and its impact on overall affordability. And then finally, I think one that's probably on every WQCC, but clarification and updates on board member expectations and that sort of thing, and attendance at board meetings. I guess it's been a little bit down in certain regions, not ours. Anyway, those are the ones. And then if you guys have other ones, I will bring them up and see if they'll put them on the agenda. They may or may not. It'll just be, I'll send an email and we'll see what happens. So any ideas? Member Cox, you had one, I know.
Well, can we get those to you later?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. You can just maybe email them, or that's probably the easiest way.
Okay, thank you.
Jeff, last year they updated us a little bit on the pollution of the Imperial Beach and the Tijuana River. So I'd like to hear what's going on with that. I don't know if that'll fit in, but it was really interesting last year.
Some of their ability to put it on the agenda will probably relate to whether they have readily available data to share that's updated. And but why not try?
I'm sure something.
Yeah, something's updated. Anything else? Woman Pierce, anything comes to mind? Yeah, happy to give me an email, probably though within the next week. They didn't set a deadline, but it sounded, I sort of said, we're having a meeting this day. And they said, okay. So meaning they're well along in formulating their agenda. So yeah, so please do. And that's all I've got. So anything else? Board member updates? All right, we will move on to the major content item of the day, and that's item four, amended time schedule order for Hot Creek Fish Hatchery in Mono County. The Water Board will hold a public hearing to receive public comments and consider adopting the proposed amended time schedule order, or TSO, for the California Department of Fish and Wildlife's Hot Creek Fish Hatchery. The hearing will begin with a presentation from staff, and staff is ready to go. And next, we'll hear comments from the public. Anyone who wishes to comment on this item remotely should already be in the Zoom meeting room. If you've not registered or submitted an orange speaker card, you're requested to do so now, please. All people expect to testify, please stand and raise your right hand and take the following oath. Quote, do you swear the testimony you're about to give is the truth? If so, answer, I do.
You.
When it's your turn to speak, please state your name and affiliation and whether you have taken the oath before testifying. That would be much appreciated as a legal matter. So with that, Trevor Miller, you are on to tell us all about it.
All right. Well, good afternoon, Chair Lux and members of the board. My name is Trevor Miller. Yes, I've taken the oath. I'm a senior water resource control engineer in the regulatory and enforcement unit. Today, I would be presenting an item for the board's consideration of adoption. The item in question is an amendment to the Hot Creek Fish Hatchery's time schedule order. And I wanted to give appreciation and recognition to Mike Reese, water resource control engineer, and also in the regulatory and enforcement unit. Without his help and his contributions, this item would have been possible. So thanks, Mike. All right, so first we'll look at the Hot Creek Fish Hatchery, or hatchery as I'll refer to it, spatially on some maps to understand the location. Then we'll re review the layout of the hatchery and some key points. I will review the 2021 time schedule order, or TSO, as I will refer to time schedule order, why it was necessary, and provide a status update on the requirements. We will then review some data provided by the groundwater investigation, which was a requirement of the 2021 TSO. We will then discuss the proposed item, the amended TSO. We'll talk about why it is necessary and what requirements the discharger needs to complete. I will cover comments received during the public commenting phase of the tentative item. And lastly, I will provide a recommendation to the board. So this slide shows the location of Hot Creek Fish Hatchery within the state. Hot Creek Fish Hatchery is located within the Long Valley Caldera on the eastern side of the Sierra Nevada mountain range near Mammoth Lakes. The yellow box indicates where in the state the hatchery is, and the larger map provides a closer view of the hatchery, which is indicated by the blue X south of Mono Lake and northwest of Lake Crowley. All right, so this map is intended to show the location of Hot Creek Fish Hatchery and Hot Creek within part of the Long Valley groundwater basin. So just out of the frame and to the west of this image is Mammoth Lakes, and just out of the frame and to the southeast is Crowley Lake. At the top of the slide here, Hot Creek is labeled. Hot Creek starts near the seeps of the hatchery and flows north out of the frame and away from the hatchery. The hatchery itself is labeled in the top center of the image here. Sierra Business Park, labeled here on the map, utilizes septic systems for the domestic waste disposal and is permitted through Mono County's LAMP, or Local Agency Management Program. Additionally, Mammoth Yosemite Airport and businesses in the area also utilize septic systems for domestic wastewater disposal. Laurel Pond, located at the bottom of the map here, is the discharge point for domestic wastewater originating from Mammoth Lakes. So Mammoth CWD discharges treated effluent to Laurel Pond via a gravity-fed system. And lastly, there are some geothermal energy facilities upstream of Hot Creek, labeled here in the northwest corner of the image. So this image shows the layout of Hot Creek Fish Hatchery. CDFW owns and operates the hatchery located at 121 Hot Creek Hatchery Road in Mammoth Lakes. The hatchery is located on 135 acres of land owned by the Los Angeles Department of Power and Water, or Water and Power, and on 66 acres of land leased from the United States Forest Service. The facility produces around 250,000 pounds of catchable trout and 1.25 million fingerlings per year. And the hatchery consists of two hatcheries, two spawning houses, fingerling tanks, fingerling troughs, brood ponds, production ponds, four production raceways labeled here on the image, and three settling ponds also labeled here on the image. The hatchery operates solely as a flow-through system, and no water is currently recirculated. And there are four concrete production raceways, each 1,000 foot long and operated in series. So the image on the slide shows the layout of the hatchery and illustrates some important points. The four blue callouts labeled with INF followed by a number represent the locations of the influent springs to the hatchery. The hatchery was constructed around these springs and seeps. The springs are affected by geothermal activity under the overlying groundwater that makes up the hatchery's influent springs. These springs supply water to the hatchery at consistent temperatures of almost 60 degrees year-round. The hatchery utilizes these natural seeps and does not have to pump any groundwater. The four green callouts represent the effluent discharge locations where the hatchery's effluent limitations are applied and effluent monitoring is conducted. Note that there are four influent spring locations and four discharge locations. In general, the flow from each influent spring flows through the system to the corresponding effluent limit or effluent location. The hatchery discharges to Hot Creek, which is a surface water that is a water of the United States. As such, the hatchery's waste discharge is regulated by a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or NPDES, as I'll refer to it. The hatchery has had an NPDES permit since 1975, and the most recent NPDES permit was issued in 2021. The orange callouts on the map represent the receiving water monitoring locations required by the NPDES order. There's a monitoring location on Hot Creek above the influence of the hatchery, and there is also a monitoring location downstream of the hatchery. Also labeled here on the map by the white square south of the hatchery is the location of the percolation ponds where domestic wastewater is discharged to. Domestic wastewater originates from the on-site facilities and housing operated by CDFW. Okay, so I mentioned that the hatchery's waste discharge is regulated by an NPDES permit. The renewed NPDES order or board order number R6V-2021-0014 was adopted in 2021. And it established total nitrogen effluent limitations for the hatchery of 0.30 milligrams per liter, assessed as an annual average. This effluent limitation is applied at all four of the discharge points of the hatchery. The discharger is unable to comply with the total nitrogen effluent limitation and routinely sees total nitrogen concentrations in their effluent discharge in exceedance of the effluent limitation. Also, interestingly, the hatchery routinely sees effluent concentrations of total nitrogen above the established effluent limitation. So, since CDFW is unable to comply with the total nitrogen effluent limitation, the Water Board adopted Board Order R6V-2021-0015. I'll refer to this as the 2021 TSO. The 2021 TSO was adopted at the same time as the 2021 NPDES permit. And the 2021 TSO provides an interim effluent limitation for total nitrogen in lieu of that 0.30 milligrams per liter that is established in the NPDES permit. The interim effluent limitation in the 2021 TSO is 1.5 milligrams per liter, assessed as an annual average. And if the discharger is able to comply with the interim effluent limitation, they will be shielded from mandatory minimum penalties, or MMPs as I'll refer to them, as required by California Water Code Section 13385. So it is important to note that the 2021 TSO only shields from MMPs for total nitrogen effluent limitation violations. The 2021 TSO also required that the discharger investigate the source of nitrogen in the influent springs to the hatchery. Specifically, the 2021 TSO required investigation into whether the on-site wastewater ponds may be the cause of the elevated total nitrogen in the influent springs. Finally, upon expiration on April 30th, 2026, the TSO requires compliance with the total nitrogen effluent limitations in the 2021 NPDES permit. Okay, so in the last slide, I mentioned that the 2021 TSO required investigation into whether the on-site wastewater ponds were contributing to the total nitrogen concentrations in the influent springs. These ponds are identified here in this image toward the center by the white square. Before the 2021 NPDES permit and TSO, these wastewater ponds were unregulated by the Water Board. So, as required by the 2021 TSO, the on-site wastewater ponds were enrolled into Region 6's Limited Domestic Waste Discharge Requirements Order. Additionally, four groundwater monitoring wells were installed. These wells are indicated by the four yellow dots on the image. To understand the impact the wastewater ponds are having on the underlying groundwater that feeds the influent springs, two of the wells were installed upgradient. Those are monitoring wells one and two. And two of the wells were installed downgradient of the ponds. Those are monitoring wells three and four. And there's a groundwater elevation labeled here on the map. And note the groundwater gradient is toward the north, towards the northeast in this image. So you can see wells one and two are upgradient, and wells three and four are downgradient of these wastewater ponds. So groundwater was sampled quarterly for 2 years for total nitrogen, coliform, total dissolved solids, and pH. In addition, the upgradient wells were sampled for caffeine, sucralose, quinoline, and metformin. These constituents are persistent in the environment and may be indicators of anthropogenic sources impacting the groundwater. After the sampling, the discharger provided their analysis that the on-site wastewater ponds are having a negligible impact on total nitrogen in the underlying groundwater and the influent springs to the hatchery. Additionally, the detection of anthropogenic indicators in the upgradient wells would suggest that there is an upgradient source. All right, so what you're seeing here on this slide is the total nitrogen concentrations in the groundwater, which were reported from the groundwater investigation. So all four wells are grouped together for each quarterly monitoring event. Again, monitoring wells one and two are upgradient of the impact from the wastewater ponds, and monitoring wells three and four are downgradient from the wastewater ponds. So the discharger provided their analysis from this data, right? Stating that the down gradient concentrations suggest that the wastewater ponds are having a negligible impact on the groundwater and springs to the hatchery, because the two down gradient wells don't show a significant increase in total nitrogen concentrations compared to those wells up gradient. Additionally, many of the up gradient well concentrations of total nitrogen exceed the total nitrogen water quality objective for Hot Creek that is applied as an effluent limitation for the hatchery. And this is represented by the red horizontal line at 0.30 milligrams per liter. All right, so now we're at today's proposed item, which is the amended TSO. So the amended TSO is being proposed mainly to allow the discharger to investigate how to come into compliance with total nitrogen effluent limitations, while also continuing to provide shielding from mandatory minimum penalties. So the proposed amended TSO would establish the same interim effluent limitation for total nitrogen of 1.5 milligrams per liter as an annual average. And with that, it would provide continued shielding from MMPs if the interim limit is not exceeded. The proposed amended TSO would also require that the discharger investigate how to come into compliance with total nitrogen effluent limitations. Three separate studies are proposed to be completed by November 2nd, 2028. The first one, a pollution reduction study. This requires the discharger to analyze operational efficiencies, maintenance practices, infrastructure upgrades, or additional treatment to reduce total nitrogen in all discharge points to comply with the effluent limitation. The second study is an intake water credit study. This study requires the discharger to analyze whether the hatchery could qualify for an intake water credit by reducing total nitrogen concentrations in all of the discharge points. So the discharge would be permitted such that there is no net addition of total nitrogen from the hatchery. In other words, to qualify for this credit, total nitrogen concentrations in their effluent must match those in the influent. And the third study is a mixing zone study. The study requires the discharger to analyze whether the hatchery could qualify for a dilution credit and associated mixing zone for total nitrogen. A mixing zone would allow for the dilution and dispersal by moving the compliance point to an alternate location after confluence with Hot Creek, and the mixing zone must not cause acute toxicity to aquatic life. So the proposed amended TSO has a 5-year term and would expire on April 30th, 2031. At that time, the discharger would have to come or would have to comply with total nitrogen effluent limitations established in the 2021 MPDS order. The Water Board cannot extend the TSO for another term, nor can it issue another TSO for total nitrogen effluent limitation exceedances. If CDFW doesn't find a way to come into compliance, the discharge will be subject to mandatory minimum penalties. So, Water Board staff distributed the tentative amended TSO for public comment on December 12th, 2025. Only CDFW provided comments on the tentative item. Water Board staff responses to comments are provided in the agenda packet beginning on Base Stamp 4-13. CDFW indicated that a water quality variance study is unlikely to provide a long-term solution and is time-limited and resource-intensive. Water Board staff agree. And have removed the water quality variance study as a requirement in the proposed amended TSO. CDFW commented that they would need direction on the scope of the reports. Water Board staff added language to the required studies to clarify the intent and scope. For example, the language maintenance practices, infrastructure upgrades, and additional treatment was added to the pollution reduction study to help identify opportunities for reducing total nitrogen concentrations in their effluent. The reference from four discharge points was changed to all discharge points. Water Board staff made this change to clarify that maintaining four discharge points is not a requirement of the MPDS permit or the TSO. And lastly, CDFW commented that a mixing zone study isn't a viable option as the springs are the source to the hatchery and there isn't sufficient flow in Hot Creek to support a mixing zone. So the requirement to complete a mixing zone study has been retained in the proposed amended TSO. As Water Board staff have not made that determination whether a mixing zone study is infeasible, Water board staff encouraged the discharger to consider whether combining effluent discharge points could achieve compliance with total nitrogen effluent limitations via a mixing zone. So water board staff recommend adopting the amended TSO as proposed. Thank you.
Thank you. Great report. Impressive. I wonder if we should maybe do clarifying questions from board members first while we have Trevor up there, and then we'll see. Do we have speakers for this one, Aaron?
No.
We don't have any speakers, either online, not in person or online. Oh, okay. Well, then we'll go right to board members. Board members, and board member Cox, start with you.
Thank you. Excellent presentation. I don't have any questions.
Thank you. Board member Pierce, let's go there.
How is the groundwater gradient determined? Is that just from morphology, or was there some groundwater studies?
The groundwater investigation, where they installed those four groundwater wells, they used the elevations of the groundwater to determine the groundwater gradient.
Man. Thanks.
Yeah.
Board Member Deaver.
Trevor, I had a question on the studies. Are any of those going to take into account the background levels of nitrogen in Hot Creek? Which one of those studies is going to check on that?
Yeah, so the intake water credit study would be the one that would take into account the total nitrogen concentrations in the influent springs. So as long as they don't have a net addition as the water moves through, then they could qualify for that credit.
So that will say where the why is 0.3 coming into the facility? I mean,
it wouldn't identify where the 0.3 total nitrogen concentrations are coming from.
All right, that's all.
Yeah.
Anyone else? I've got a couple. Do we have a sense of the nitrogen values for the influent now? Do we have a best guess or any data at all on what's, in other words, if they were to try to match the influent with the effluent?
Yeah. So as a part of the MPDS permit, they're required to sample the influent springs for total nitrogen, as well as nitrate and nitrite. So yeah, we have, they sample quarterly, I believe. So yeah, we're tracking, you know, what there's.
And how does that relate to the 0.3 or the 1.5? I mean, where is it falling?
Yeah, sometimes it comes in just below that, but more often than not, it's at 0.3 or above, and it can go up to 0.6. So it generally falls between 0.3 and 0.6.
0.3 and 0.6. So they're right. Okay. So if they were to try to match that, they'd be somewhere north of 0.3, but south of 0.6 probably.
Yeah. And I mean, it would just be dictated by what they're monitoring in their influent.
Yep. And you noted that they're exceeding values. Are they exceeding the 1.5 values consistently, or are they somewhere between
0.3
and 1.5?
Yeah, we just assessed for mandatory minimum penalties. So if they would exceed 1.5, they would be subject to MMPs. And there was no exceedances of that interim effluent limitation. So they're within compliance.
Okay. And then it mentioned in here that there's a basin plan objective, potentially looking at that as a possible change, which I presume would change the 0.3 milligrams per liter. I mean, it may or may not, but that would be the idea to take a look at that. Is that...
Yeah, so separately, our basin planning unit staff have been looking at a possible basin plan amendment for the site-specific water quality objective of total nitrogen. You know, so as that identifying whether that 0.3 milligrams per liter assessed as an annual average is supporting beneficial uses, and whether an increase in that site-specific number would continue to support beneficial uses.
Right.
And it's my understanding that it can be raised, but certainly not in like towards 1.5, where it would, you know, remove the risk for mandatory minimum penalties.
So are we likely to be starting that study or doing that look in the time frame that they have here? I mean, they've got five under this TSO, they've got 5 years to sort of figure it out.
Yeah.
But presumably somewhere in the middle of that 5 years, if it's not, they're not coming close, they're going to start wondering, what do we got to do, right? It's because they're not going to wait to the last day of the fifth year to decide we can't get there.
That's right.
So what's the likelihood of the water board moving in a direction to understand a potentially different objective or not? I mean, it sounds like this. We may not even do the analysis. I'm a little unclear.
The analysis is currently ongoing.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's going simultaneously. I don't know the projected date. We could ask maybe basin planning staff if they have it.
And do you have a sense of that, the timing of that one?
Well, it was identified as a high priority issue or project in triennial review. If Mary Wagner or
Dan or Eli.
Dan or Sussman are on the Zoom, they could probably provide you more accurate in terms of
Okay,
what is happening.
they don't need to do that now, but maybe if send me an email or something. We'll,
Yep.
yeah,
Okay.
just is yeah.
Hi, this is Elizabeth. Just to add additional component to the process, we've been discussing changes to the basin plan. If that's done, there wouldn't be an automatic change to the NPS permit. It would still have to go through the public process of commenting and a board mem you know decision on whether or not to change the effluent limit.
Thank you. That's all I had. Thank you, Trevor. Great presentation.
Thank
Really
you.
appreciate it.
Excuse me, you had to go give your speaker card to Ariel and then come to the podium so that the recording can hear you.
Yeah, there are little orange speaker cards in the back. Go ahead and fill that one out, and we'll any other board questions or comments while working if that brought up any thoughts. All right.
Well, while we're waiting,
Yeah.
the mixing zone, is there, how do those work? Explain that. Can we introduce air to it to get the mixing? Is it just the natural flow, or give me a little more detail on that.
Yeah, so this will be our first time going about this as well, so it's going to be a learning curve for us. The requirements are specified in the SIP, which is the standard for toxics implementation, and we're asking that the discharger complete the mixing zone according to that, right? But it's essentially allowing some dilution of the receiving waters to help bring that concentration down. So we'd be changing the compliance point somewhere downstream after allowing for some of that dilution. And so there's some models that they can use that take into account like seasonally high flows and low flows and where that
So
comes
there's
from.
more than one way to accomplish that then.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. We may call you back, Trevor.
Okay.
So hang tight. And Nicole Gephardt.
So hello, I'm Nicole Gephardt. I'm representing the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. I wanted to answer your question about some of the data that's been collected from 2021 to 2025. So, for example, the annual average from influent one and two was 1.5 milligrams per liter in 2025. While the effluent one and two annual average was 0.8 for 2023 and 2024. Influent three had a max of 0.9 in 2023, and influent four had a max of 1.2 in 2023 as well. So, there are times when the influent is well over the 0.3 milligrams per liter. And there are instances where we've added 0.3 to 0.5 milligrams per liter of nitrogen to Hot Creek, but there are also instances in which we've removed nitrogen, if you will, because we discharged less than what was in the influent. So in 2025, we had a max of 1.5 coming in from influent one and two. But our effluent had a max of 0.8. So that's actually less nitrogen going out than what was coming in. And then I just also want to mention that the well water data shows that there's nitrogen above the water quality objective. And so the intake water credit study that would consider the amount of what's in the influent and the inability of the hatchery to add to the discharge would really limit our hatchery operations and constrain our ability to supply fisheries to the local economy. So I do wish that you guys would take that into consideration.
Thank you, Nicole. I had just one question. Have you all discussed or thought about what some of the possible, I'll call them mitigation measures or improvements might be? So this pollution reduction study, I mean, what are the kinds of things that a hatchery could do realistically or feasibly? I realize you probably don't know yet, but what give me some examples.
One example that we've been considering is connecting our settling ponds one and two. That would eliminate effluent discharge point effluent one, and then connecting settling pond two to our third settling pond called McBurney Pond. So that would eliminate effluent one and two, and we would only have effluent three and four. That might also help with the mixing zone study, as there may be a cumulative capacity allowed for total nitrogen at that point. But again, we would need to do the study to determine the feasibility. And I'm sure, like most state agencies, we're limited on funds as well. So it's a challenge.
And one last one. Others have a question. I don't mean to hog the question. Just one last one. I'm assuming you're using some kind of a model to analyze these options. Is that how it works? You kind of got a model of what's coming in, what's going out, and kind of what your operation adds to it and concentrations, those kind of things. Is that fair to speculate?
Yes, we have facility operations for feeding. Feeding is also money. So the less food we feed, the more money in our pocket. But also, there's that condition factor where fish need to be fed a certain amount in order to gain a certain amount of weight. And that is what we do take into account. We don't just overfeed our fish. We clean regularly. We only use drugs and chemicals in the event that there's pathogens. Seen at our hatcheries, but other than that, there's nothing in our hatchery practices that add nitrogen to the system.
Thank you.
Could you put up slide six, please? So, Nicole, is this where you're saying that you would combine the effluent one and two and three and four?
So it would be the first settling pond where you see effluent one pointing. We would connect that to the settling pond next to it, and then which is the effluent two, and then effluent two would be piped to McBurney Pond, which is where you see effluent three. And so thereby we would eliminate effluent one and two, but we'd still have effluent three, and effluent four is on a different system. It's a tributary to the Hot Creek.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for the
Thank you
clarification.
for
Appreciate it.
thank you. Appreciate it.
Any other questions for Mr. Miller? No, we're good. All right, I'll bring it back to the board for deliberation and decision, whatever. Anything? Any comment? No comment on it? No? Then a motion on staff's proposed recommendation.
I will move approval of the item.
Doesn't need one.
I'll second that.
I assume this is a roll call. Yes. Board Member Deaver.
Aye.
Board Member Pierce.
Aye.
Board Member Cox.
Aye.
Board Member me. Aye. How are you supposed to say that? What's the chair votes aye. Okay. Sorry. Thank you. Thanks so much. All right. That concludes that item. And we wish CDFW, great luck and good and Godspeed and making something happen here that works. We're trying to make it work for you, so I hope we can. Thanks, and thanks for coming here and clarifying those things for us. Okay, we're on to item five. I think let's look at the time here. It's 1:54. Does anyone need break? Okay, we're going to take a modest bio break. It's 1:54. We'll come back at 2-ish. We're on break. Okay, the board is back in session, and we are, thank you, everyone, and we're on item five, and that's the executive officer's report. And Ben Letton, we would love to hear from you.
All right. Good afternoon, Board Chair Lux and other board members. My name is Ben Letton. I'm the executive officer here at Lahontan, and I'll be bringing you item five, the EO report, which is, starts on page stamp 5-1 of your packet. So first, I'd like to just go over some personnel updates. In terms of promotions, I'd like to recognize Lorian Sanders in her promotion to Senior Engineering Geologist of the Department of Defense Site Cleanup Unit. Lorian was previously an engineering geologist, and she backfilled Alonzo Poach's position as he promoted to division manager. So congratulations, Lorian. With new hires, we would like to welcome Fred Brott. He's an environmental scientist in our cannabis unit. Before joining us, Fred interned in the Department of Land, Air, and Water Resources. And we're just really, you know, pleased to have him on the team. Welcome, Fred. We had some internal transfers. Mo Loden is now working in our planning and assessment unit. She's an environmental scientist who previously was working in our non-point source unit, and now she's working under Dan Sussman in planning and assessment. Kathleen Bindle is now an engineering geologist in our non-point source unit. She previously worked in our forestry program, so some internal movement and transfers going on. With respect to vacancies, we have a water resource control engineer vacancy in the cannabis unit. We're scheduled for interviewing in April for that position. We also are hiring for an analyst one. That's an administrative position in our South Lake Tahoe office. We're kind of in the final stages of that. Interviews have been conducted recently. We have an analyst one position in the Victorville office as well, which is on a parallel track. Interviews were conducted recently and final documentation is being submitted. A lot of great candidates for both of those. We have vacancy in the DOD site cleanup unit, Victorville, the engineering geologist position that Lorian just vacated. Likewise, we have an environmental scientist position in the forestry dredge and fill unit, which I believe was vacated by Kathleen Bindle. And an environmental scientist position in the non-point source unit that was vacated by Mo. So handful of vacancies, handful of transfers, some new hires, lots of updates in terms of personnel. You'll notice in your board packet that we have one EO report for the month of January, starting on bait stamp of 5-6 is a great article titled Supporting Natural Disasters, Project-Based Learning in K through 12 grades by Christina Guerra and Tiffany Steinert. We also have an article on bait stamp 5-8 titled Renaming Washishu Creek in Support of Racial Equity by Kelly Huck and Danny McClure. We have a standing item in your board packet starting on bait stamp 5-11. That's the grazing status update for 2026 from Mo Loden. We also have a really great article, Regional Freshwater and Estuary Harmful Algal Bloom Annual Program Update by Sabrina Rice, starting on bait stamp 5-15. And finally, a request from a board member last year, an update on the Sackett decision and impacts of Tawaters of the state. This article is by Tiffany Steiner and Brian Talmadge, understanding the Sackett decision and its impacts on waters of the state. So some great articles in there for the month of January. I was going to touch on, and I'm happy to take questions at any point, Chair Lux.
Why don't we pause there and see if anyone has a question or comment on those five or six, because that was quite a bit of stuff in there. Anything? Board member Neighbor? No?
Well, I just on the promotions and vacancies, I'm just so glad that the organization promotes from, you know, we see so much internal movement of folks moving to higher positions. I think it's so healthy, and it shows a vibrant organization.
Thank you.
And I just want to add a thanks and appreciation on this couple paragraphs here about the Sackett decision. I think it's pretty critical. I'll be ever curious to see what impact it does have, particularly on our staff load and staff work, and you know the amount of work we have to do to kind of make up for the lack of federal presence there. So
yeah.
I appreciate this information. It's great.
Yeah, a lot more training. Staff are doing a lot more training in terms of delineations, you know, because of the void in some cases that was there from Army Corps. I've also seen a bit of an uptick, sort of anecdotally. I don't have the exact numbers, but in enrollments in a general WDR that we have for dredge and fill activities. For that we use primarily for, you know, waters of the state. So it has having an impact, but we've also received several positions from the Sackett decision to add to our dredge and fill program. So that helps in terms of staff resources. Okay. We covered cleanup and abatement funds when Nicole Morgan gave her update. Again, just really great to have some money for a lot of really great projects in light of the fact that we had our discretionary contract money cut. So really pleased to see that went through. I'll note that there is no quarterly violations and unauthorized discharge report in your report and your board packet. So no update today from our enforcement coordinator, Shelby Barker. And my report is going to be pretty short. The only other thing I wanted to direct your attention to was the very last page of the EO report, Bates Stamp 5-35. And this is something we added a couple board meetings or back sometime last year. But it's just a snapshot of the items that you can anticipate hearing at future board meetings. I'm not going to go too far out. Just the next board meeting is in Apple Valley on May 6 and 7. And one slight amendment to what you see there. We're actually going to have our fiscal year 26-27 priorities in August to with accomplishments. So we're going to put those two together and have our priorities and accomplishments in August.
Sorry, Ben. We are not seeing that. It ends on 525, at least in my packet.
Okay.
I may, is that true? 525 is your last? Yeah. So we don't have a between 25 and 35.
Okay. Ariel, can you make sure that the board members get a full copy? Yeah.
Yeah. There must be just a couple of pages missing.
Well, let me just read them for you for May. Okay. So again, the board meeting's in Apple Valley. It's on May 6 and 7. We're going to have an item, Cow Creek, reverse osmosis, new waste discharge requirements, Mountain Pass Mine, Mill, amended waste discharge requirements, a George Air Force Base informational item. We're going to have a PFAS informational item with several members of State Board joining us and our own staff to give an update what's going on statewide, but then also more specifically what's happening in our region with regard to PFAS. And then the last item is a Hinkley Dairy informational item. You'll recall that in February, we had several members of the public come to our board meeting and express some frustration with the bottled water service that was being provided to them. So we proposed at that time bringing an informational item back to you, and we're going to do that in May. So so those are the items. And again, we're going to bring fiscal year 26-27 priorities to you in August. So sorry about that in terms of the board packet, and Ariel, make sure you get a full copy. And with that, let me just double check my notes. That concludes my report.
Thank you so much. Any questions, comments from board members? All right. Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it. All right. We're on to item six, which is a kind of a new piece, but I think an important one. This is board member requests for future agenda items and other items of interest that, you know, may or may not pop in future agendas. So Anyone have any burning items that they want to see come back either sooner or later?
PFAS was one of them I wanted to hear about, as well as an update on George Air Force Base. Is George on the May agenda? Okay, thank you.
Board Member Pierce?
Not at this time, thanks.
Board Member Deaver? I have two. I would just be curious as to the process or the thinking behind what might be the next vision plan. I don't mean to say let's do it tomorrow, but just kind of how we make that decision and, you know, whether it's years or, you know, kind of and what might be some possible candidates. And then it's probably a year out or more, but I'd like to keep up on Tyokee's invasives and get an update at some point when there's something to say. I know that there's all these complications with both legal and physical, biophysical, but I would love to hear an update on where we are at Tyokee's invasives at some point.
Okay. I'm really glad we added this item to the standing item to the agenda. I'll take both of those suggestions and then maybe give you some feedback at a later day whether or not it makes sense to do those in the form of like an informational item at the board meeting or, you know, an EO article, you know, or some other report back to the board. But duly noted, vision process in terms of vision plans, future candidates, and then something in the future on the Tahoe Keys aquatic invasive species issue.
Yeah, appreciate it. Yeah, it doesn't need to be at a board meeting. It can be many ways of telling us what's up.
Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. Anything else, board member?
So this I have to give credit where credit's due. I noted that Region 1, the North Coast Water Board, does this item. And so I stole the idea from them, so to speak. But it seems like a good opportunity for board members to be able to provide suggestions in a, you know, an agenda item, you know, at the end.
Yeah, I really appreciate this item as well. And I think I can't speak for others, but I think we're in agreement. I would say that it doesn't mean we're saying, you know, okay, here's the 17 things we just gave you, 17 more things to do. It's just, you know, it's items we're with a keen interest. So. All right, we are on to item 7, which is closed session, which we do not have. As I understand it, there's no closed session today. So with that being said, we are ready to adjourn. Thanks, everyone, for being here and participating. And thanks to staff and those who are out there in the Zoom environment. And that regular meeting of the board is now adjourned.